Justin Rose has been on quite the adventure today. He's in the lead. He is back to 6 under. Finau's playing well, and here comes Justin Thomas, who is 4 under through 12, 3 under so far, so he's 3 shots back. As we welcome in Mr. Golf Aficionado, a lover of the Masters, Dirk Chatlin. What do you think of the leaderboard right now?
Well, Justin Rose just made a birdie as you were asking the question, so he's back to 7. It's the beauty of the Masters is that the field is small and exclusive, so you almost always get a great leaderboard because they basically removed all the no-names in golf who would otherwise qualify for these major championships. So you almost always get a good one. This one is probably a little better than most right now. And, you know, I think Spieth adds so much drama to it. I'm a Jordan Spieth guy. And I think, you know, he's on the first page right now. That makes it more interesting. It's and there's still basically half the field that has to play today. So it's going to be a really good, you know, it's going to be a really good event. I think everybody missed it last year and sort of missed the traditional Masters. And this is shaping up to be that, no question.
And speaking of Spieth, I mean, what a great story. If he can pull this off to winning a green jacket early in his career, having a meltdown, one of the more historic meltdowns during the Masters, really struggling. But then he turns his game around. He wins last week. And you go, man, he's only 27 years old. It would be quite the story at a young age for him to be at the height, struggle, and then start to climb back up.
Yeah, and he's probably, you know, he's probably only 40% of the way through his professional career.
True.
I mean, or less than that even. The shelf life of a golfer is so long that, you know, you're going to go through some ebb and flow, but his is more dramatic than most. And I think it's been sort of exacerbated by his, some of his emotional mood swings, not necessarily temper tantrums, but just the emotion that he has on the golf course. He's sort of the anti Dustin Johnson. And so I think, you know, his game has been a little bit volatile, but man, when he's on, there's almost nobody that's more fun to watch. And he's been on this first few months of the season, and he feels more comfortable at Augusta National than just about anybody. So I think if he's up there on Sunday, everybody's going to be watching this thing just because they want to see what happens.
Are we good without Tiger this weekend?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the guy to ask because, as a perennial Tiger critic, or maybe not so much a critic of Tiger personally, but just a critic of the attention that follows Tiger. I don't necessarily miss him. I was happy to see him win it 2 years ago, but I don't need him in my life at Augusta National when I watch the Masters. I know most people would disagree with that. I think there's plenty of drama, even if he's home on his couch watching it.
But you can't go an hour without watching it with his name not coming up. He's walking around with a closet of jackets.
Put it this way, he's the harshest winter storm can arrive, and wearing 5 of those green jackets, he'll be just fine.
So. You say critic or no? But here's the thing: American golf is actually in a really good spot without Tiger Woods involved. I mean, you got 8 of the top 10 golfers in the world are American. And you've got Americans that are on the front page and the first 2 pages of the Masters. So from that standpoint, the sport is in a good spot with Americans, you know, being some of the best. It's just the attention. I mean, are we transitioning from Tiger to DeChambeau as the next guy to bring new people into golf?
Well, it's tricky because, I mean, I was a golf nut before Tiger Woods arrived, okay? And I sort of resented the attention that came with it in the late 90s and early 2000s because, you know, I just got tired of people who were watching golf only because of Tiger Woods.
Yep.
I don't like, you know, when he's in 43rd place and they're showing every shot that he hits. There's just some things that have irked me over the years as kind of a purist. And I'm not saying every purist is the same way. I know a lot of diehard golf guys who love Tiger Woods more than anything about the sport. So I don't know. I think that obviously there's a transition happening. I mean, even his win in 2019 was, you know, it had sort of happened in the middle of this transition from the Tiger era to the post-Tiger era. I think a lot of the guys that you see now on tour are, you know, grew up in the Tiger generation, where they were inspired by him, where they got better because of him. They're, you know, I think they're capable of carrying the sport. I think the sport is really fun to watch. I think it's got a lot of variety right now, from DeChambeau to, you know, to Spieth to Justin Thomas to, you know, Dustin Johnson to Brooks Koepka. I mean, there's a lot of depth there, but you know, I don't know how much that resonates mm-hmm. with people who are not tuning in to watch, you know, the Valero Texas Open on Sunday afternoon. My guess is, you know, golf is going to struggle for a while because how often is the top golfer in, you know, the world also arguably the most famous athlete in the world? You know, that's probably never happened, and it may never happen again. So if we're comparing the next era to the 2000s, yes, it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment for the casual golf fan. But if you're asking a guy like me who mm-hmm. was there, you know, tuned into the sport in 1994 before Tiger got into it, I'm fine with how things are right now.
So on the heels of that, about a popular, the best in the sport, also worldwide popularity, Rory McIlroy. If I would have told you, Dirk, after he won, what was it, the Open and the PGA in 14, that Rory McIlroy would not win another major since then. And yesterday I'm watching him another first round at a major, and he has no idea where the ball's going. What's happened to a guy like Rory McIlroy?
Well, first of all, that's sort of the nature of golf. And I don't, you know, I mean, that's sort of stating the obvious, but this is a game where the muscle memory can get away from you pretty fast. But he's also just, you know, he's never been a great scorer, right? Mm-hmm. He's a great hitter. He's a great ball striker. He's an unbelievable driver. But he's just never been like a great scorer. You know, he doesn't get his ball in the hole as well as a lot of other guys. And
true.
So when he's 120 yards away in the middle of the fairway, Jordan Spieth's going to hit that ball to 15 feet. Rory McIlroy is going to hit it to 28 feet. And that really, you know, adds up over time. And you know, Rory gets hot. I mean, he's hot and cold probably more than most guys. I think he's talked about, you know, how he started chasing distance after DeChambeau got big and started hitting at 360 yeah. and how that had an effect on his golf swing too. You know, I think he'll come back, but no, this is not the same guy that you know, had won four major championships by 2014. And it was funny, when you were asking that question, I think it was 2015, maybe 2016, I interviewed like four local golf experts. Seth Porter, my buddy, who lives a couple houses down, he's the UNO golf coach, mm-hmm. and a few other guys. And I basically just said, who would you take, you know, who would you take for the next, you know, 10 or 15 years, most major championships? And I gave him Spieth and McIlroy. And, you know, it was kind of 50-50 at that time. I mean, Spieth was on top of the world and McIlroy was on top of the world. And, you know, it seemed like they were going to kind of go back and forth for the next 5 or 10 years. And instead, I think combined, they've only won one major championship since.
True.
And that's, you know, that's just golf. Golf is hard. There's always another wave coming up, and there's only four of these things a year. I guess what stands out about the conversation, though, is how young these guys still are.
True.
And how much time there still seems to be for them to sort of turn it around.
Yeah, so, and that's
we'll see. I like Spieth's just kind of his grit and competitiveness more than I like McIlroy's, and I think that's, you know, probably going to be true the rest of their career.
And that's absolutely fair. I mean, Spieth is 27. McIlroy is only 31. It just
right.
when he was on that run. And, you know, went to Augusta National to try and wrap up, you know, the Grand Slam, and hasn't been able to get another one since. It's kind of like, and then I watched him yesterday, and I felt for him yesterday. I mean, what are the chances an errant shot's going to hit your dad? But he was hitting the ball, as you saw. He was hitting the ball. He had no idea where it's going.
Yeah. Well, and in golf, again, you're really vulnerable. You're susceptible to some bad, you know, bad muscle memory and bad habits, and those things can last for months, if not years. And you're really on display for everybody. I mean, if you're missing jump shots on an NBA team, you can sort of blend in and do other things and hide and, you know, pass the ball. You know, Paul George is as bad as he was. He can still blend in and make an impact in other ways. In golf, your vulnerabilities are out there for everybody to watch. And I think, you know, when these guys struggle, it really is a test, not only of their mental nature, but also sort of their pride. You know, they've got their humility. They've got to be able to endure some, you know, when you shoot 76, 77 at a major championship, you got to be able to live with that. And even when it's embarrassing, and I think Rory's going through that right now. Jordan obviously went through that. You know, I think it's just sort of the nature of the game.
How do you think the temperature is in the volleyball office of the NCAA after yesterday?
Man,
I mean, that thing got sideways.
Start, like, predicting questions, you know, that you're going to be asked like a week ahead of time. And it's like, who would have guessed that one? Right?
Oh, I mean, it got the backlash yesterday. When you have the NCAA's responding with a tweet, a three graphic tweet at 8 p.m. at night, you know that it has gone up the flagpole and it is not good.
And it's just so avoidable and predictable. And, you know, I had this conversation a couple times, but, you know, a week or two ago, I was when there was all the chatter about, you know, inequity among treatment at the women's and men's NCAA tournament. You know, I made a couple of comments about, you know, volleyball can't even get a 15 seconds on SportsCenter, and it's like the NCAA sort of treated it the same way. It's like, okay, you know, nobody really cares about this. We know we have to put on this tournament because, it's sort of in our contract, but we don't actually want to do it. So we're just going to make it, you know, as easy as possible for us. We're going to limit the field. For some reason, we're going to, you know, hold it all in a convention hall the first few weeks. It's just so disrespectful. I guess that's the problem I have with it. And you know, I realize volleyball is not a huge revenue sport. I realize it's not going to, you know, the national media is not going to get into an uproar about this. But it's just really frustrating because I think it was so avoidable. I mean, this really had a chance, I think, to be kind of a cool deal where you spread it around town. And of course, you know, you're going to limit attendance and you're going to have all these COVID restrictions, and that's fine. But there was sort of a possibility, I think, to kind of make it a big festival atmosphere where everybody can really get behind the sport. And instead it's like, okay, let's just, let's hide this thing as much as possible. Let's just get it over with as fast as we can and get everybody out of town. And I just, you'd think the NCAA would have seen that coming to some degree after women's basketball, and apparently they just didn't.
How do you get out of this? I mean, I know they're responding, but you got coaches who, you know, week out from the most important part of their season, they're dealing with these issues logistically. That shouldn't even be brought up by coaches. They should have somebody else doing that. But because they care so much about their sport and their student athletes in a state that loves this sport, I don't know how you turn it around and make good on this.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of times you'll have these things, you know, when coaches or athletes think something and they want to get a message out. You know, a lot of times they'll make their calls to the media members that they know, the national media members especially, and those media members sort of write what's going on behind the scenes. In this case, the highest profile coaches they don't even care about their anonymity.
Yep.
I mean, they're just going at it, right? They're just they're making very clear how they feel about this, and to their credit, I mean, I think it underscores how strongly they feel and how offended they are by it. And you really don't want to have something that jeopardizes the legitimacy of the tournament, a distraction, you know, a court surface that doesn't meet the standards. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways that that you can have sort of the legitimacy of the competition jeopardized. And I think that's probably one of the biggest coaching fears right now is, man, what if this affects, you know, if we win or lose a match?
Yep.
This is supposed to be a big deal. And again, the sort of the comparison of the club volleyball President's Day tournament down at the convention center that I've been to, and it's just complete madness. It's kind of what it feels like where this is headed. And I know it's not. I know the NCAA is probably, you know, going to do everything they can to clean this up, but it's just a disappointment. I feel like it could have been a really cool event, and they're just not taking it very seriously.
No, you make this special for everybody that is involved. Instead, it almost seems like it could be a hassle. And they still got some time to fix some things, and I believe they will, because you can't have the head coach of the number one seed in your national tournament calling your organization lazy. You just,
yeah, how about that?
I mean, but
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how blunt some of the criticism has been. I mean, and again, that just shows you how intense the feelings are. This is widespread at this point. And, you know, I feel sorry for the Nebraska native in charge of this competition with the NCAA, because, you know, I don't think it's her fault, and she's the one that's sort of trying to repair a lot of this.
Well, and I also think, and this will be something that we may find out in the College World Series when there's a bunch of new faces here from the NCAA, is they've had a lot of people leave in the last year that have taken buyouts or early retirement that have been running these kind of events, and they've got so many things going on right now. I don't know how much in terms of resources, in terms of bodies and experience they have with these events that are not men's basketball or, you know, something else of major moneymaker. And so you get the ball dropped a little bit. I also wonder how much input they took from volleyball people when, okay, we're going to take it to a non-traditional venue. What do you have to have? How does this have to look? How do we make this work? Instead of, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because we kind of mock the standardization and sterilization of NCAA championship events. You know, it's like everything they do is so so built according to protocol that it just, you kind of roll your eyes at it. But there's a reason for that, because when they don't stick to those protocols, when they don't stick to those standards, you have situations like this where it's like nobody knows what's going on, the organization is lacking, the details are lacking, and I hate to say it, but it just you know, it doesn't reflect well on Omaha.
True.
I
mean,
it sort of makes it look like Omaha is part of the problem. And that's really frustrating too, because I think, you know, obviously nobody cares more about this than Omaha. And when you consider our passion for amateur athletics and NCAA championships, I think when everybody heard about this possibility back in December, November, that they were going to hold it all in one place, I think there was a lot of excitement about it. It's like, oh, cool. Let's really make a big deal out of college volleyball and sort of build, you know, a couple weeks around it. And instead it's like, geez, you know, not only are they not letting anybody in, but they're also just trying to get everybody out of town as fast as possible.
Well, get in here for what, 11 days, 10 days and get in, get out. And all right, on to the fall when we can do it normally. Get chatter on this. You wrote about it earlier this week. Tim Miles for 2 years has kind of laid really low in Lincoln. Hasn't been public, but he's lived in Lincoln. I think that's out of respect to Fred. And I know that he wanted to get back into coaching because I think he'd like to win 500 career games before his career is over. And he's looked at some jobs, he's interviewed for some jobs, and now he's finally got a job. Why do you think San Jose State was a job that he interviewed for and thought, this is a place for me?
Well, first of all, I think this isn't a direct answer to your question, but it's interesting to me how the longer these guys sit out, and I have not had this conversation with them, but it sure seems to be true that the longer these guys sit out, it's like there's sort of a stigma attached to them. You know, it's like, you know, if you're Richard Pitino, you're better off getting fired and jumping to the next one right away, I think, than you are sitting out for a year or two and suddenly your employer – potential employer starts asking, well, why did you sit out? You know, why did nobody else want you? It's almost like kind of a recruiting scene. So I'm sort of disappointed that he didn't get a higher profile job. I think he deserved it. When you look at his track record, you know, at Colorado State and even before that and at Nebraska too. I mean,
he did not get it done at Nebraska. There's no question about that. But he also had more success at Nebraska than most guys. And what he did in season two was really impressive. And so I think he merited a bigger job than he ended up getting. The reason I think this one makes sense is because, one, he has a pretty good feel for that conference. You know, Nico Medved and Craig Smith have been really successful there. Miles was obviously really successful there at Colorado State. He knows what it's like to walk into an arena and a fan base that has basically given up on basketball. He knows, you know, that spirit and confidence and, you know, people being connected is all really important. And so from that standpoint, I think he can raise the floor pretty fast. But this is a terrible job. You know, this might as well be a JUCO program in California. So I don't know if it's, I don't want to say, I don't know what he's getting, if he knows what he's getting himself into. I'm sure that he does. But man, this is going to be as hard as any of them, I think, because there's just no track record at all at San Jose State.
Well, last time they were in the tournament, I think was 96. They just, they won 20 games in the last 4 years.
Yep. No, it's really something. And I'm sure it's a cool part of the world. I mean, it's right there at the bottom of the Bay Area. You know, you're within shouting distance of Stanford and Cal and San Francisco, and it's got to be a really vibrant, fun place to live. And you'd think that that would help in recruiting, especially when you're going against, you know, Wyoming and Ogden or Utah State. Where's Utah State at?
Logan.
Okay. When you're going against Utah State and, you know, even New Mexico and places like that, you'd think San Jose would be pretty appealing, but I just don't think there's been any sort of investment or understanding of what it takes. And, you know, Doug Wojcik is a credible name in college basketball. He went out there and didn't get it done. I mean, it's been tried. So I think Tim Miles will have some degree of success. I sort of personally, for his sake, I wish he would have, I don't know if you hold out one more year, but I think he could have gotten a little better job than he ended up getting.
He's going into a conference, you know, he knows a few guys that are already in the conference, like Nico Medved is one of his better friends who's at Colorado State. But Steve Alford is in that conference. Richard Pitino is in that conference. Brian Dutcher's in that conference. Ryan Odom, who was at UMBC, replaces Craig Smith at Utah State. You know, Lon Kruger's son just took over UNLV. Leon Rice has had great success at Boise State. It's actually turned into a pretty good conference in terms of coaches and quality of play, where San Diego State has been, you know, the lead horse, but it's a multi-bid conference. I'll be curious to see if he's able to follow. I've always said this, Dirk. His blueprint in any program is the first 2 or 3 years, just tear it down, slowly build up. Year 4 or year 5 is the breakthrough, and then it's time to move on and let somebody else try and keep the success going. It happened way too early at Nebraska. The following year just was was not a good year with a majority of those guys off the NCAA team coming back. You know, 4 or 5 years out there, if he slowly builds it, I mean, they might build a statue for him if they ever make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's a different part of the world. That's interesting to me. You know, he's been so anchored in the Midwest that I think that'll be mm-hmm. interesting to watch. Is it a better job? Is the worst job in the Mountain West better than, you know, the fifth best job in the Missouri Valley? I doubt it. I mean, I know he knows what he's getting himself into, but I think he could have done a little better.
There's a lot of San Jose State basketball fans now that are going to be in this state watching him. Dirk, as always, I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend of the Masters.
Okay, take care.
It's Dirk Chatelain from the World Herald. Before we're out of here, we'll get you an update on the leaderboard. Justin Rose has done a nice job of rebounding. He has ridden the roller coaster, and he is even through 16. He is back to 7 under. He's got a 2-shot lead. As he heads into the weekend, trying to win a green jacket. All right, George got his NBA minute as well. It was nice to see the TNT crew return last night. Didn't take long for Barkley to roast somebody. He went after the Clippers.
He sure did.
He went hard in the paint, and you were not going to stop him.
Nope.
It's 128. It's Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone. Hey, there's nothing like watching a baseball game. The weather is getting warmer. We're now a little over a week into the season. So we have some sweeping generalizations. The Cardinals actually might be pretty good. Boo. Arenado might be a good pickup. Boo. Well, now that baseball is here, you can enjoy the games even more with our good friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. Now, if you've never bet on baseball before, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. FanDuel is letting new users swing for the fences risk-free. You'll get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. And once you have an account, you can get up to $25 back each day if the same game parlay bet falls one leg short. This way, you can combine multiple baseball bets for an even bigger win all season long. There's a reason why FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is simple to use. They've got great odds on all the different betting markets. They've got unique options like same game parlay. Always promotions, so you got to check daily, hourly. And when you win, you get your winnings in as little as 24 hours. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Sign up with my promo code Gary162 to get in on all the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Gary162. 21 over, present in Iowa. First online real money wager only for risk-free bet. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site. Credit expires in 7 days. Restrictions apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-BETS-OFF.